Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
Nope. Nope.
And
I'm John. Me.
Is that a critique on my opening dialogue?
Nope.
Nope. Fair enough. Yep. And welcome to the show. This week we will review Nope.
Nope.
And Nope. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll get our first thoughts, and then we'll go into deep spoiler analysis. And then, there is no end then. TV Corner, Chapawait, Episode 5. Is that also a nope, or what'd you think?
Oh, to your question? Nope. But I'm answering your direct question. So, are we in TV Corner now? Have we walked over there?
We're in TV Corner. Well, let's walk over. Yeah.
All right.
I'm all frazzled because of the heat.
Yeah, too bad it's like miles uphill. So we'll get there in about 20 minutes. Just bear with us, people. All right. You want my first thoughts on this episode? What episode are we on? Two?
I don't know.
Five, yeah. Right?
What's completely throwing me off was I changed the script on my notes, and now it reads something different, and it's throwing me off.
I'm pretty sure we're on The Prophet, episode 5.
Episode 5, yes.
Yeah, because Jacob, spelled J-A-K-U-B, lures Charles to Jerusalem's lot, finally. And that is, like,
yes,
kind of the big part of the show. Let's see. How do I start this off? This episode, I feel like, in sort of like tonality and mood even, right? For me, it took like a sharp turn. It all of a sudden was very melodramatic. It was like borderline soap opera-ish. Because a lot of like all of a sudden the scenes were all like, oh no, but Jacob did this. And like, oh, did you hear this? Oh, what do we do? And the entire time I was watching this episode, I was like, if this was the fucking tone and mood of the very first episode, I would have been all in instead of being like, oh, we have to watch another one. I'm all sold now. If it's going to be like a soap opera-esque sort of like show like this the rest of the series, I'm 100% in. It made it a lot more fun to watch.
Yeah, actually, well said, because that's... I wasn't quite sure how to feel about this episode, but the... But the only thing I was going to mention was that we're finally I feel like there is a tonal shift. Like you said, like now we're completely doing a completely different show, yeah. Right? It feels 100% like a brand new show.
And it completely justifies every critique I had about the first four episodes. Like the way Adrian Brody and Emily Hamster were like kind of portraying these characters is like, oh my God, why are they acting like this? Oh, it makes perfect sense now. Like if they just told us this was what the show was at the beginning, I'd be like, this is fucking great. I love it. It's like a gothic soap opera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I actually, the original tone of it was like, oh, this is going to be high drama, prestige TV. When in fact, I think it's kind of revealed itself to be kind of, you know, like you said, a trashy melodrama, which I'm cool with. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's
100% cool with.
Actually, more in tone with the... more in tone with what I was of a vampire story, I guess. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah. Anne Rice-esque type of, right? Yeah.
Yes, perfect comparison. Yeah. Anne Rice type of like melodramatic, trashy, you know, story and stuff. And I think this actually is much better. There's a lot of shit happening in this episode. They just were just firing away. That was like the other thing was like, we got a flashback. There's a fucking book. We know what's haunting Adrian Brody now because the fucking book. We know what blood for blood means.
We know who Jacob is. Did you watch this with your fiance?
No. She didn't watch it.
Okay. Damn. I was going to see what her opinion was because like, yeah. I don't know about you, but like halfway through the episode, I turned into like that person that's like, oh my God, what the fuck are you doing? Nuh-uh, don't do that. Oh my gosh, she just said, nuh-uh, don't do that. And then at the very end of the episode, I was like, oh my God, bitch, they went there.
it's kind of like they were told you're not going to have another season. It's like, okay, well, let's just table set okay. Everything.
Go all
throw
in.
Everything out. Yeah. Yeah, and like they seem to be perfectly okay with a vampire. We met Jacob, who's the vampire.
It is accepted overnight. The last episode of this episode, people are like, "Oh fuck, vampires!" Right? We all know about these, and it's like, you do. Is there anything else you want to give us? Like, why are you so like you just? Oh yeah, vampires. It's like No, even the Lost Boys had a little bit more fight before people accepted vampires.
Yeah. But I'm cool with this. Yeah, we got... I thought the thing they rushed the hardest was, like, again, they showed one of the original Boons. He was the preacher, right? And he was stabbing people.
So yeah, that was a bit of a twist for me actually. The whole like, is this book really gonna be what saves them, or is this book what made them lose it? Because it seemed like he was just going insane. But maybe this book has kind of like what did Sam Raimi call it in Multiverse? The Darkhold, right? Is that what the book was called? Where it like the longer you have it in your possession, the more out of touch you are, and you just go a little nuts.
I don't recall that, but
in Multiverse of
that
Madness?
Makes sense. I don't recall
it
that
was
part of it.
The main book, like that's what made Wanda go a little. She went darker because she had the book for so long.
Oh yeah, you're right. I got what you're saying now. Yeah. Yeah, because apparently there's this other town we finally see called Jerusalem's Lot, which I really thought was a cemetery plot.
I know, me too, yeah.
But it's just like, how would you describe it? Like a, like gypsy-ish people who live on the outskirts?
Oh, well, I'm not going to use that word.
Is that...
Rolando.
Sorry. I don't know the appropriate
people that live a very bohemian lifestyle.
There it is. Yeah. They lived but no, they're like the way they portrayed it was like as if it was they were all like drug addicts, right? That's like a common theme for
it that seems to be I guess there's like a very hard allegory in this show with addiction and right. I think that's what they're trying to portray. I don't know.
I believe
if that
so.
Was
yeah.
Stephen King's original intention, right? He was just. I think when Stephen
Maybe.
King really wanted to write something of like deep substance, he really did write it. Shawshank Redemption, right? Or The Running Man. Mm-hmm. Anyways, moving on. Or
Running Man.
Yeah, you remember when he was under the name Burt Bacharach? I'm just kidding.
Burt Bacharach.
Somebody was trying to convince me. I was like, no, you didn't know Richard Bachman wasn't the same guy? I'm like, oh, okay. Our conversation's done, bud. Like, no, this guy named Richard Bachman, they collaborated together. I'm like, okay.
I mean, you can are you Google serious? It. This was revealed like 30 years ago.
Yeah. By him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Salem's Lot was something he was trying to do anything deep with. It was already enough that he wrote a modern day vampire story, I think was like enough at the time.
I feel like if they had this fucking, you know, group of people that lived outside of town, I feel like we should have been introduced to that much sooner. Yeah. Right? It seems like a thing that they should have talked about at least, right? Like more commonly, because I feel like the way they revealed it in this episode was like, okay, well now this is Jerusalem's Lot, and you know, like they're forwarding, advancing the plot at such a pace that it's just like, now, like we were saying, like this was advanced, and it's just like, okay, all right, it's kind of like there should have been like the townsfolk. I mean, all we've focused on so far is Chapawade and, you know, Charles Boone, you know, arriving at this town. You know, that's all that we've basically done for 3-4 episodes.
I got to give somebody some props for their unmovable ability. Stray from the character, the dude who's like kind of like the main, not the main antagonist, but like the one old guy that's like, oh, you need to go away or die, blah blah blah, that guy, I forgot the name of the actor. She's like really keeping to it, you know. Usually at some point these guys try to make themselves likable in some way. You know, like pretty much like every bad guy in The Boys at some point is like they're trying to make him likable, right?
Yeah.
This guy is like, no, like it's going to be a satisfying end for his death, or it's going to be the worst reveal of who the actual bad guy is. Because what if he is? What if he's in control of Jacob Boone?
Yeah, the way they set it up was that Jacob is this, you know, cultish leader who we find out's the vampire, who lost his book that the Boone stole. And the Boons are like vampires, but they're like their own. How does that work? Because in this episode, Jacob was able to control the people in his little group. If the other Boons are vampires and were created by him, why can't he just control them? Why does he need Adrian Brody's Charles Boone to get the book back from him? Does that make sense? I don't
know. Maybe because of... maybe only certain people are allowed to have the book, I guess. I don't know. That's my guess. I'm not sure. Like, once it's in somebody's possession, it's like some sort of, like, spell or something.
Yeah, it's kind of like... Jacob was like...
I was going to say, I think we have to also perhaps accept the idea of other forces, like witchcraft or something, I think is what's going to happen. We've got to be willing to accept that there's more... I don't know. Yeah, because I also kept confusing Jacob with Philip Boone.
Okay, yeah. Who is the actor we like, right?
Julian Richings?
Yes, yeah.
But because like the Jacob character, it took me a minute. So I was like, man, I'm like so confused now, because now he's talking about how ancient he is. And then again, because I kept confusing him and Philip Boone, I was like, man, maybe he just started like plowing recently. And then he made this family that hates him, I guess. I don't know.
The more we're peeling this back, the more it makes literally no sense. I don't understand why Jacob, a powerful vampire, can't get his stupid book back. And why nobody in this town knows anything about this group of people, right?
Yeah.
It seems odd.
Yeah, which I'm hoping that it's going to be like a dramatic reveal of how everybody's hypnotized, or how the Boons have been like keeping everybody safe this entire time.
That's true. Yeah.
Even though it still doesn't make quite sense what happens at the very end.
Oh, she's coming back as a vampire, by the way. Yeah, that's what's happening. Yeah.
I mean, I was assuming that's what was going to happen. But then... Mm-hmm. Okay, so the daughter is quote-unquote killed at the end of the episode. But her, right, her body's like Loa. Dumped, drained of blood in mm-hmm. broad daylight. Which made me think that I don't know how she could come back as a vampire. Because it looked like he checked her pulse and she wasn't alive.
Right. I think I was going to compare it to Midnight Mass. Remember the priest wasn't... He got turned, but wasn't a full vampire until after he, like, died or whatever, right? He, like, had, like, a severe seizure reaction. And then he became the... I know that's, like, not the same thing.
But... No, because he also eventually fed off of his host vampire. Eventually.
Yes, yes. And I believe that's what's going to happen. Loa's going to be... vampire, I think. She's going to join them. Join the other Boone family.
Because it's either that, which is the most, like, acceptable thing, or they, like, legitimately mm-hmm. just fucking kill her off, which would be like, whoa! That'd be hardcore.
It would be too sudden. I think they should... I think the way the show is, like, written, it's kind of like these kids are incredibly important, especially this child, Loa. So... if they were to die, I would assume that they would try to make that death resonate, and for her to just be found randomly dead at the end of the episode without any kind of follow-up or any kind of other event. It just seems like, especially since the other Boone, I forgot his name, Steven, is it's to me, it seems like Steven is trying to manipulate her to join him because his daughter died, right?
Well,
that's the feeling I get.
I took it more of like they are just strong arming Adrian Brody.
Hmm.
Like, hey, your daughter's one now, so what are you going to do? Why don't you just join us? Give us the book and join us.
Yeah, so he's going to be torn between his family and then like...
Jacob.
Yeah. Jacob. Yeah. Oh, you're right about that.
Because I'm also... okay. Which this is probably not going to be it because it's a little bit too complicated and nobody wants to write this much anymore. But if we accept the idea of witchcraft, right? Okay. We can also accept the idea of ghosts, right? And what if there's ghosts that we don't see yet, right? And maybe that's what, what's his name? Steven was talking about when she said her mom was still alive. She's just a ghost.
Maybe, yeah. Either I can see that.
Or these bodies can be dead for a long time as long as you just give them a little bit of your blood. They're fine. Because I was confused as to like how, unless like they've been like, this has been planned for a very, very long time, which I mean, I wouldn't put it past the show, right? That they've planned mm-hmm. on killing Charles' wife just to lure him into Chapelwaite. You know,
possibly they don't. I think that she died of illness, right?
Or yeah, but like we don't really know
what illness.
No,
I'm assuming it was like a sea illness or something, right? Or something.
Yeah, like she got real seasick.
No. Nobody eat the crab. The crabs are bad.
I made some lobster bisque yesterday. Apparently, it's not holding well. Just while late, my wife has kicked the bucket. We're all very, very sad, but with that in mind, don't eat the lobster bisque and do not drink the butter afterward. It's like, Charles, we don't have any butter on the ship. Okay, even more reason not to drink that cup of butter. I actually don't know what it is. Maybe that's what killed her. Anyway, you guys live the rest of your life however you want. I'm going to move to Chapelwaite. I got a free house.
Yeah. Where I will perfect my bisque recipe.
Yeah. And I'll make my own butter where I know where it comes from. With surely the flourishing farmhouse that I am sure to see when I get there. And nothing about it will suck. And then everybody raises their eyebrows, and then that's the end of how that happened. But they didn't want to show you that because it would give too much away.
Yeah. Just going to jam it like they did the flashbacks in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, we're going from a show that is like become exposition central.
Uh-huh.
And then when we jump into Nope, it's like nothing's really explained to you, and it was really refreshing. It was like,
yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, no, it's still fun. Hopefully he can, you know, become a great bisque baker of Maine, whatever it is.
Yeah, honestly, this show could get a little zanier and I wouldn't mind it at all. I'm like really into it now.
Yeah, actually, I would be super happy also that if it just like cut the, we're trying to be serious TV show, damn it, and just have fun. Have fun with what they're doing.
Yeah, as long as like the very last moment of the last episode, you hear "Don't Give Up on Us" by David Soul to give you a little little hint of what's to come.
That's the connective tissue between this series and Salem's Lot.
As Charles Boone is laying there dying but surely to become a vampire, you just hear David Soul like whispering, "Don't give up on us, baby." And then you hear several Jeep doors slamming but not shutting completely, just swinging back open as he walks away.
They could just, as the credits roll and the sun is going down, they can just have David Soul's face silhouetted in the sun. Yeah,
as the sun
goes as.
And then just have whatever original Nosferatu, like maybe Jacob, just like hissing at the sun, like, because he knows it's David Soul.
Yeah.
As prophesized in this book we haven't found yet.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. Can't recommend the show enough, actually, now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it sounds like we don't like this show, but no, we do. We like this show. It's good. Okay.
I was gonna say, cousin From, when I didn't like something about the show, I really didn't like something about the show. In this show, when I don't like something about it, I'm like, but I don't know what's gonna happen next. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah,
the show goes wherever it wants. It does what it wants.
It's finally starting to get to that cheesy 70s melodrama, TV melodrama that we've been missing.
Oh, yeah. So good. I mean, okay. What really sold it as, like, this is a fucking soap opera, this is where I'm sold, is the whole dramatic sequence of Adrian Brody, Charles Boone is, like, talking to his daughter, and his daughter's like, "You fancy her, don't you?" And he's like, "No, well, I just need a blah, 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 blah," and walks away. And then it cuts to Emily Hampshire's character, and it's like, "You fancy him, don't you?" She's like, I don't know. Like, what the fuck is going on? And then this is right when the kids find her journal talking about the family and writing her book, like, "You don't actually like us." She's like, "It's complicated." I'm like, yeah, give me more of this shit. Yeah, let's throw in some vampires too. Fuck yeah.
And throw in some cutaways shots of some dead kids in the church.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, shit's good.
Good shit. Okay, cool. Chapel 8. It's getting good, guys. It's getting really good. Okay, cool. We can move over to our main review of Nope. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please. Yes. Not of planet Earth. No, that isn't
beautifully
one.
Described.
That's just something we should address. It is Jordan Peele's inspiration. All right. For Jordan Peele's Nope, coming in at number 3 for my 5-word plot summary. More reasons Santa Clarita sucks.
That works on two levels.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I was flipping you off. Sorry. Two levels.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, we don't have to explain it. Just go ahead. Continue to the next one.
Coming in at number 2 for Jordan Peele's Nope, I have Evasive Species Sucks for Town.
That's, there it is.
And that is something LA has a big problem with, apparently. You know what? Let me, before I go to my number one, one of my good friends, who goes by Clint, is an avid nature goer guy, right? And I can point to basically any fucking animal. It doesn't matter where I'm at. He's like, oh yeah, that's the, blah, 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 this and blah, 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 that. I'm like, cool, cool, cool. He points at one of the squirrels, which we see the same exact squirrel everywhere. The orange sort of red ones, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, these fuckers are an invasive species, and we should only be having gray squirrels, but they've been bullied and killed out by these orange squirrels that came from I forgot what fucking place. He's like, yep, they pretty much bullied all the gray squirrels, which were our original squirrels. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a gray squirrel. Not in California.
Yeah, I haven't even seen them. No.
It's like, gray squirrel. That's fucked up. Oh, well. Anyway.
Cool.
And then,
interesting.
Coming in at number 1 for Jordan Peele's Not of Planet Earth, Brother and Sister Horsing Around.
There it is. Yeah, excellent. So, we recently saw Us.
Yep.
And I said it was refreshing to rewatch it, knowing already all the plot twists, and see what a masterful storyteller Jordan Peele was. And I think we're both higher on it, right? The second time we watched it, or you've always been a fan of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I always liked it. But I did have the same sort of qualms about it the first time around. But like I said, I think I've watched it like, I don't know. This had to have been like my 5th time. But over the course of however long it's been out, which would be real embarrassing if it was like 2019. But it was. Wasn't it? Fuck.
It was,
anyways, yeah. So I've seen the movie several times. Yeah, it was really good.
Okay.
So coming into this movie, trying to like gauge expectations and like, you know, lower them the first time around. I gotta say, I really loved it. I thought it was fucking fantastic. It's such a homage to like the Day the Earth Stood Still type of pacing at the beginning, mm-hmm. with this thing.
Right.
And, you know, there's just a lot to be said about, like, this is a through and through science fiction film.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. With that said, one of the things about Jordan Peele is that I think what I said about Us is, I feel like basically transplants over to what I think of Nope is, I think Jordan Peele is one of our best filmmakers, and he's making some amazing movies on the largest scale that are interesting characters, beautiful cinematography, thought-provoking, well-shot sequences, like one of the most masterful filmmakers, like without, hands down, one of the best filmmakers we have. But I honestly think that like I was not a fan of the story of this one.
Oh, really?
And I feel like the script is what hinders him. And again, those were the issues I had with Us. I feel like, yes, I understood Us and saw the way he was telling his story and saw that he reinforced those ideas. So a lot of people complained about Us having like story elements that were kind of out of nowhere. But if you really pay attention to that movie, there's a lot of things that he reinforces visually and through story that may enhance that film. And I feel like that's the same, almost the exact same thing here. I feel like Nope was purposely, I feel, done kind of ambiguously, non-linear almost, when And when I feel like he, I don't know, I don't want to like diminish it, but like he, like I feel like the story could have been simpler and he could have like not made it so complicated. I don't know if I'm explaining myself correctly, so, but
what about it was non-linear for you? Because I have the way, exact opposite,
yeah,
feeling. Yeah,
the way he segmented it, right? So the way he segmented the film, like the way he kind of broke it up into chapters. Each chapter was the name of a horse, right? So he had like Jean Jacket, he had Ghost, so on and so forth. It was like four different segments, and I felt like. And I think there's something we could talk about in spoilers that I felt like could have been reinforced a little better about the, what's his name?
Steven, I should have Yen's had the character? Cast here.
Yes. Yeah. I felt like they could have done more with him. I think so, there's an obvious storyline there. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, but overall you did catch that, like, this is very much his criticism of the way Hollywood is makes things.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The way he makes things, I totally got the Gordy story, right? How that's, you know, how that reinforces the way the horses were treated and the way the relationship with the Haywoods and the creature, the alien creature, right? The way they all kind of were stories that he reinforced the way he like I said, it's well written. Mm-hmm. I think that, but I still was feeling left cold. Does that make sense on the story element? I think that's the main thing, is that I felt like story wise, there's character beats that I felt less invested in the characters. Does that make sense? Like,
okay.
Were there anybody?
I don't think this is a spoiler, but when I watched it, I also was like, was there something I missed? But then I thought about it, and it's, I think, Steven Yeun, his character died as a child. I know he's alive, but he died as a child. And this was like his hell almost.
And his character specifically, I have this one criticism of, but we could definitely talk about that freely more in spoilers. But just as a summary of the film, I think that just the way he uses tension, the way he shot the movie. I would have loved to see this in IMAX. Oh my God, I would have loved to see it in IMAX. The scale, really the way it was shot. I would have, this is an absolute movie you have to check out in theaters.
Oh,
I know that's not like
Kiki Palmer's like sort of depiction of like the hungry fucking filmmaker that has no idea how things work. she fucking nailed it. It was so good. And then I think Daniel Kaluuya's like idea of like the sort of jaded, like, this is just who I am. I don't even, you know, I don't give a shit about you. I just care about like my way of life. I guess my what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my God, we haven't had this in such a long time because America's Got America. Sorry. Hashtag still a proud American. quality of life. You see, it legitimately took me that long to remember that because there hasn't been a quality of life. Anyway. I don't know. I really enjoyed this film.
So did I. And I think the acting is exceptional. Like, I loved everybody in this movie. And there are all so many memorable parts.
I cannot get past one thing with Daniel Kaluuya's character. Every once in a while, I'll be like on the ground, right? Because several things happen. And I just can't get over how fucking buff this dude is. like what the fuck? He's a horse wrangler, right? But he can also bench press like 800 pounds. What's going on?
Yeah.
Because the whole time I was half expecting him to like just jump off of the horse and like hit the thing in the sky and drag it to the ground Hulk style because he's so beefy. Anyway.
I really liked the OJ character. I only found him to be kind of passive. Does that make sense? And I was trying to understand why. Because he seems indifferent to the job that he's working as a horse wrangler, right?
He's good at it. The horses, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's good at it, and actually him understanding how to tame a quote-unquote wild beast works out to his favor, right? Yeah.
I don't think it's him being passive. I think it's him who has lived his entire life, because apparently, you know, his sister left. It's him living his entire life at this place in Agua Dulce, which is the middle of nowhere, Santa Clarita area-ish. And just how he's only with his father, and all he does is talk to horses all day.
Yeah, I totally get that. I kind of sense that I feel like there was this like almost like a scene missing, right? That like before his dad died, is the way he's behaving always how he behaved, or is this in fact a reaction to his dad passing tragically in the beginning of the movie? You know what I mean?
In the flashbacks of him as like a teen or a kid or whatever, he's kind of acts the same way.
Okay, so that's the way I read it too. Like, yeah. I was like, okay, well, he's kind of quiet and almost like reserved.
I mean,
because he was upset his dad died.
I feel like, yeah, maybe possibly, yeah. I think he was, but he also like, I think they purposely jumped 6 months so he can just be a different person. It's 6 months between his dad dying until you see him again right after the credits. I feel like there are hints of their father being a very aggressive and kind of like a stern guy.
Okay.
You know, I feel like there was some moments that kind of hinted at how hard he was on his son. And that's probably why his son is so, you know, kind of stoic. And also, you got to be that kind of person when you're dealing with horses. Because I don't know, like, I mean, we've been around horses before. They're fucking scary. if you're not in charge of the horses, if the horse is unfamiliar with you, these things are fucking massive and they are strong as fuck. You can't startle them because they'll trample you to death. So you got to be very calm and collected. So I think that's all a part of like what his idea of the character was supposed to be.
Yeah. I never really got that sense about the dad. Maybe it's worth a rewatch for me, but I personally never got the sense that he was stern. I did see him as almost a reflection between M and OJ's personalities, right? Because M is more like, she's more the showman, right? And his dad could also be a showman and also knew how to like deal and handle the horses almost like OJ. So it's like they're OJ and M were kind of like two where the fathers split apart almost, right? They take two of his stronger traits, right? Yeah. Like, that's kind of like how I saw it. Like, but I feel like very little is there from the dad, and there are some scenes where they do talk about him a little bit.
He pops out again a little bit in the flashbacks.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think, but I
kind of was like, no, go ahead.
What the key thing you're missing is the reason OJ is like won't back down from things and needs to keep going. It's because like even his dad at some point was like, no, I don't give a fuck. And got in a very long winded fist / wrestling fight with Roddy Piper. Just because he didn't believe. He was like, wear the sunglasses. And he's like, I'm not going to let this cracker tell me what to do. So he's like beating the shit out of him.
You know, yeah,
and that's his personality. Am I talking about the wrong movie?
Yeah. Oh. I don't think we are.
I'm pretty sure They Live is a prequel to this Alien movie.
I kind of felt like, as much as I liked the characters and I love the actors, I love the direction, I did feel like sometimes the characters were ciphers. Sometimes a little hard to read on their behavior, why they were doing things. You know, I think that was kind of, but I think that he purposely did that by choice. I think that's a directing choice he did, meaning like maybe he purposely wrote him that way or you know, kind of everything he's doing has a point to it, right? And I wasn't as clued in on what it was, what things were supposed to mean, because I feel like he is throwing quite a few things at you. That can be ambiguous and of course be read as metaphors for other things. So it was a lot to take in.
I've had a little more time to let it simmer too, I think. Yeah, because I saw it on Tuesday. And I've just been like thinking about it and talking about it with random people. Homie that works the front door at Permanent Records, not gonna say any more names, but shout out to Permanent Records Roadhouse. But yeah, he's the guy that was like, dude, you gotta go watch Nope before we talked about watching it. That's why I was like, maybe we should watch Nope.
Yeah.
But yeah, even like the character, like Brandon Perea's character, Angel Torres. Yeah, Angel, which I think like everybody was named specifically to kind of, I don't know, portray a different aspect of humanity, I guess. I'm not sure yet. But I didn't understand his insistence on like helping these people with this camera work even before he realized it was like an alien thing.
Yeah.
Right? The only thing I had going in my head, but it was like not disclosed in the movie, was, well, I could pretend this is the fries, because obviously it's the fries in Burbank. If this is the fries in Burbank, then maybe this is like shortly before 2020 and it hasn't closed down forever yet. Unless it's, I'm pretty sure it's like gone. But like maybe he was just trying to find another job. I don't know. Which also, shout out to Jordan Peele for able to pull somebody like Barbie Ferreira to just be in the background for like two scenes for like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
I was seriously waiting for her to become like a bigger part of the story. And I was like, oh, that's it. That's all she does.
Yeah. Yeah.
But good shit. Now also, yeah. So shout out to Keith David, one of our fucking favorite Carpenter actors of all time, right?
Right, yeah.
He's been in all the good ones. Which now we can finally clarify, he is not the thing at the end of the movie, because this alien would not have killed him.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy, Michael Wincott, I was so stoked to see him in this movie. I didn't know he was in it.
Dude, he has like the craziest voice, right?
I mean, that's and you know it's him immediately, right? Because they don't reveal his face when you first see him. It's like, holy shit, that's fucking Alien Resurrection's Michael Wincott.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's the way Jordan Peele used him in the scenes and the way he used his voice was like, it was very intentional, right? But it was incredibly well done, you know?
Yeah, and I guess you at some point do meet an artist like this guy, right? Like, what happens to him is almost pointless. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you felt about it. That was,
His character is kind of not, I kind of get why he's in it, but I don't know. It was kind of, his behavior was interesting, especially towards the end. I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, because I get why he's there. He's there because like he's the sort of crazy guy who would probably invent, you know, not invent a camera, but have a camera that wouldn't need any power or any kind of electricity.
Yeah.
Which is why you would need a guy who would be crazy enough to want to, you know, have the quote unquote perfect shot.
The impossible shot. Yeah, I think
the impossible shot.
I think that was important to him. I think he's like one of those people that just strive for something like that. And I don't even think he cared about the notoriety, about the whole situation. He just really wanted that. And I mean, we're about to spoil it. We might as well spoil it.
Okay, let's do that. Let's go to spoilers.
We're 6 hours into our podcast. We just had to talk about Chapelwaite because I know it sounds like we're shitting on it. But it's perfect.
All right, let's go to spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
So Michael Wincott was able to steal the crow that carried Brandon Lee's soul finally.
Yeah.
No, yeah, so he... what's the best way to spoil all this? So, the alien is not a ship. It's an actual, like, organism, like an organic material right. sort of animal.
That looks like that,
Yeah, it kind of it looks what? Sort of...
like a ship, a UFO. Like a UFO, it looks like a ship.
Until yeah. until it like it pulls itself open, then it looks like a bunch of sheets. No, it looks like
sheets, bugs. I don't know, some kind of like flying but like creature.
The middle of it, which is like showcased a lot with the first like stunt person to have a horse on film, was a black man, and it's very important. And it's kind of got the same idea. So I feel like it was supposed to be like it's their destiny to catch this thing on film.
Okay.
Because they're yeah. part of this lineage of, like, you know, doing the impossible.
I want to say that, do you think, something they hint at, do you think that obviously when the UFO type creature, the alien creature was around animals, it had like that a visceral reaction to it. Do you think that has anything to do with Gordy's reaction? Because we do see the shoe that stands up on its own. Was that because the UFO was close, or do you think it was just some freak occurrence that has nothing to do with it? Because there were a lot of like strange things that would happen and go on that might be able to stand on its own like that, that maybe the creature was there at the time when Gordy went crazy and killed some castmates and everything.
I don't know. That's a tough one. I had that sort of theory also.
Mm-hmm.
Because another spoiler is you find out at the end that Gordy has had this ongoing relationship with this extraterrestrial by feeding it horses. Because mm-hmm. I always thought, like, when they were talking about the beginning of the film, I just thought he had like some sort of like gimmicky thing out in the middle of nowhere. But no, apparently he's been feeding this thing.
Oh, we're talking about so Ricky. You're talking about Ricky, right? The Jupe Park, right? Because Gordy yeah. is the monkey character. That's what I was referring to.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But I know exactly. We're talking about the same exact scene, but yeah. I just mixed up the characters. I don't know. I don't know if that's just the way his memory was, because we're looking at it through Steven Yeun's eyes. That's a tough one. I'm going to say that there wasn't okay. anything involving the being in that. I think it's just
okay.
the mistreatment of animals, because they think they could just treat animals like that, and the fucking... this Gordy just went, you know, like, fuck it. I hate this.
Right. I agree. I think that only person who can answer that is Jordan Peele. Right. He's probably the only. I don't think yeah. there's enough evidence in the movie to conclude anything, right? But yeah, no, who I really want to talk about, the biggest character I had a problem with was Steven Yeun's character, Ricky. So, in all intents and purposes, Ricky should be the bad guy of this movie, right? Did you ever get the sense he was? Because the way I saw it is, and it doesn't happen in the movie, because I feel like the way Jordan Peele wrote him, you empathize with him incredibly.
Yeah.
You do see him as somebody who's kind of like entrepreneur, wants to make a quick buck everywhere, you know, is exploiting whatever fame he has and stuff. But once they reveal the complete kind of Gordy story, and you picked up on it where it's like he did die that day, right? He did his
yeah.
He didn't physically die that day, right? But he's innocence to it, right? Died,
yeah.
And then he's been trying to like. You meet him and he's a total like shell of a person. He's just like, he's this character Jupe. He's no longer Ricky. He's just Jupe, right? He's just selling, yeah. selling. But it never seemed like, so when he reveals that he has this new show that he wants to display, and we end up seeing that he has been having these encounters of the UFO, did that seem out of nowhere? Because I feel like that came out of nowhere. Even though as a
twist, sure. As the way he was presenting everything, not really. He doesn't want another Gordy incident. I think at this point he's just afraid of this thing, and he needs to like feed it horses, and the only way he can really do that is if he keeps funding this thing, like, right? So that's why the only reason he has an audience is so he can have enough money to buy another horse to feed it.
Right.
And that's why he seems a little bit desperate towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Because in my opinion, I feel like they could have, the Jupe character is, because there's nobody that's bad, right? But he's one of the only characters that I feel like if you had, you could see him as somebody who's being trying to exploit it, right?
Yeah.
Which goes completely against what he went through as a child. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because once he does the show, it kind of makes sense why he was buying the horses, why he's kind of trying to always find a way to make profit, right? Even using his kids and not, as not aliens and stuff like that.
But not for nothing. Mm-hmm. He's a child actor that had a traumatic experience. And it's just like, you rarely see famous child actors go on to try to do anything else. Even if they fail, they keep trying to get back in this business. Because that's all that's all they know. And B, they never have had an opportunity to really learn another trade. And most people don't want to do that because they had all this quick money and they're like, I don't know how to live another lifestyle.
Corey Feldman. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say to that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, I think that the way his Jupe's behavior to me is somebody who is quote unquote the antagonist of the piece, though I feel like Jordan Peele never portrayed him as such. Does that make sense? And that to me that was a disconnect. Oh, you know,
because I mean, he's not a bad guy. He's not trying to be a bad guy. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I just felt like his behavior was kind of nefarious. And his story, though tragic, his behavior after that was kind of nefarious, right? It's somebody who's trying to just cling to whatever fame he has, right? Being exploitive however he can to make ends meet. Kind of like what you were saying right now.
That's why I don't think these people intend to be exploitive in their own nature. They're just like, this is all I know. And like their entire life has been documented. So it's not like they understand privacy really, or the privacy of the whole situation, which is why he's like, I don't really show many people this room, but this is like the Gordy room or whatever. And it's like, you're like, that's fucked up. But then also, I don't know. He probably, I don't know, talks to a bunch of therapists or doesn't talk to any at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. Pretty good. I wasn't really sure who, like, there wasn't really a human antagonist in this, really, huh? I didn't really think about that.
No, and I feel like since this is kind of like supposed to be like Jordan Peele's sort of, he described it as his summer movie, like spectacle movie. Yeah. If we were to compare it to the movies that it's influenced by, like Jaws, to me, Jupe's character is the mayor of the town. Right. In Jaws.
Yeah.
He's the one kind of bad guy. But though I feel like Jordan Peele was more interested in saying something else about that sort of individual, which is what we're describing, right? That the way child actors are exploited and the way you can even say that, you know, Gordy, the ape that goes crazy or whatever, was exploited just like Jupe was. He was a kid actor who was exploited. Exactly. You know what I mean? They both are on a path to being used and abused and thrown away, right? That's kind of like the metaphor there.
Arguably also, you could also say Keke Palmer is kind of the antagonist of the movie. If they had decided to just like, hey, there's a fucking alien in the sky, we should probably call somebody, instead of like, we need to be the ones that capture it because I need get quick rich scheme so people can appreciate me for being a director, writer, /actor, which you've met these people. She did a great fucking job like portraying these people. Like, oh, I'm also a comedian. Right. I was supposed to do this or do that. And it's like, oh my God. Like only in Hollywood, every other person is saying the same exact thing, but they're like, no, I'm different. It's like, no, you guys are all the same. Like it's, you know, So, like, if she hadn't been so pushy about, like, we need to capture this. And you're right, OJ is just very dismissive. He's more concerned about taking care of his home. He is kind of, like, the territorial version of that area animal versus the other animal. But he knows how to, like, yeah. I don't know.
So... No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I was that's what I mean. Like, I felt like there's a scene here where, like, we could have seen OJ. Like, why did OJ go along with what his sister wanted to do? Like, why would OJ be interested in that? Like, I never found, like, there was never a scene explaining how this had benefited him. We heard a lot of talk about, like, him needing money, him selling his horses. Yeah. He wants to get the horses back. But I never saw it from OJ specifically, like, why he would want to do it. He just kind of went along with it. Which is why I was saying, like, he's kind of passive in a way.
You nailed it, though. Like, the one moment you really catch him, like, fuck. Like, I just need to do whatever I can at this point. Is very early on when she talks about it, when he's like, well, they offered me money for this place, which would have been his way out of debt and, like, trying to get out of that. Because apparently he's in massive debt. That's why he keeps selling the horses.
Right.
And Kiki Palmer's like, well, how much did they offer you? And he's like, I forgot how she worded it. Or are you stupid? And he's like, probably am stupid. So I think the thought was, like, he should have sold the ranch in the area, but he didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, I think he's always trusted his sister. Like, I think that's the also the thing. It's like, well, I've always trusted her. So let's see what we can do.
Right.
But then shit goes wild. And then that's why they need to get a bunch of wacky inflatable arm man to save the day.
So, yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. I think that there's, I don't know, man. I feel like there's a version. I feel like you and I are, like, filling in the gaps for this movie ourselves. And maybe that's Jordan Peele's intention. But, like, I think I honestly feel like there's an easy streamlined story that could be that is there that could be told that he chose not to do, which I thought left me feeling a little cold about it. That was, like, the only thing, though. On every other aspect, every other level of this movie, I appreciated it and enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, I actually was, like, very curious as to know who that, like, the reflective helmet rider was at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was interesting.
Yeah, great. Good movie.
Yeah. Okay, cool. You want to just go to... Sexy, you want to rate it? Ratings? Yeah,
let's do it.
Cool. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you're doing.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Jordan Peele's Nope 8.9 sexy spooky bones.
I'm gonna go 7 out of 10 sexy spooky bones, but I know once I rewatch it, I'm going to enjoy this movie much more. I feel like.
I mean, when it comes to the movies we reviewed so far this year, like, it's Black Phone and this one. And then I got to be honest, the rest of them, I'm like, eh. Like, I'm not actively telling people to watch them.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Okay. Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Hot Sexy Deaf Summer.
The sequel. It's coming.
Skeleton Crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to go.